You say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo, and oh, man, I'm going to tell you what. You know, I have had guests from Australia here before, right? Okay, so we had a culture guest, Colin. I can't think of Colin's last name all of a sudden right now, and we brought him in. He was fantastic. Matter of fact, we brought him in twice because he was so good. It was awesome. Well, I got to tell you something. I have run across this book called Trusted to Thrive by Marie Claire Ross. And it is absolutely phenomenal. It is so comprehensive. Listen, the secondary title, I think, is really what speaks to the book. How Leaders Create Connected and Accountable Teams. You know, in my coaching business, I am always asked about accountability and how we can make better connection. And I know Marie Claire does the same thing. She always is hearing, how can my team be better connected? I feel like my team's not very connected. And I know she hears also, you know, I don't know how to make my team accountable. Well, it's only part of the picture. Right. This is the thing that Marie Claire says is that, you know, accountability, yeah, it's important, but it's only part of the picture. Because the bigger picture is how well do you have trust in your organization? I'm gonna let you stew on that for a second. Because the problem is that Marie Claire says in this book is, and we're gonna talk about it, is that you probably don't have as much trust as you think you do because everybody just thinks they have all this trust in their organization. And it just doesn't exist. Not the level you think it does. Right? So how do we develop that? Why is it important? Well, you know, Marie Claire's going to answer that too. Because it's really important. Matter of fact, it's fundamental. It is. I would say this. If you were building a sandwich, this is how important trust is. If you were building a sandwich, it's the bread of the sandwich. It's that fundamental. Because if you don't have bread on a sandwich, what do you have? Try making peanut butter and jelly without bread. See how that goes on your hand. Right? That's how fundamental trust is. And we're going to get to her in just a second. Before we do that, let's do what we do every week. Right? We walk through the four areas of your life. Right? Here's the deal. Right? We're four-part people. We're physical, mental, emotional, spiritual people. Right? And so we need to be working on those areas every day of our life. Because the truth of the matter is, if we're not growing, what's happening? We're dying. That's the truth. Because we never stay the same. Right? Matter of fact, Marie Claire would probably say to you, that's true of your business. Because I read that in her book, that it's a thing that you have to be building constantly, daily. Right? She would say to you, you've got to be walking in your business. You've got to be visible in your business. You've got to be building trust daily with your people. Because guess what? If you're not doing that daily, guess what happens? You're going to lose it. Because it's so much easier to lose than it is to get. So we have to be working on this physical, intellectual, emotional, spiritual area regularly, right? So here's how we do this, all right? With a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being my training in this area is awful, 10 being my training is outstanding. How would you rate your physical training in this area? And what I'm thinking is like, you know, getting enough exercise, drinking enough water, getting enough sleep, that you're eating the right foods. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you feel? 5 being average, how would you feel you're doing physically? Right? Are you getting your regular checkups? Are you doing everything you need to do, right? Now, listen, regardless of what the number is, that doesn't matter, okay? Because if your number is a 2, it's okay. We're just trying to get to a 2.5, all right? So what do you need to do right now to change that, okay? Second number, the intellectual number, right? We can't be couch potatoes and just letting everything come at us. And sometimes with the pandemic, what's happened is we kind of let everything just kind of come at us and we're not being an active participant in our intellectual growth. That means what are you doing to grow yourself professionally and personally? What are you reading? What are you consuming, right? You know, this is a great book that works both halves of your brain, the right half, the left half, gets you thinking creatively, gets you thinking logically. But there's other ways to do that, right? You can take up an instrument. You can take up, you can learn a foreign language. You can do so many things, but be an active participant. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you say you're doing in your intellectual training? Okay, now you have 2 numbers. Third number is emotional, right? Listen, we make it really simple here on A New Direction what the emotional number is. It really comes down to this. How well are you able to control your emotions under stress and pressure, right? You know, like when you're hangry, you know, can you control it? And then 2, How well are you able to tap into and understand the emotions of others? Hmm. That's interesting, because Marie Claire talks about in her book that listening and really tapping into and understanding your people is part of doing what? Building trust. Isn't that interesting? Isn't it interesting that all these areas just kind of seem to connect? So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you say you're doing combining those two areas? All right, now finally, the fourth number, spiritual number, right? And you know what? The truth of the matter is, I know some of you want to say you're not all that spiritual or whatever, but the truth is we all are. We all have faith. We all walk by faith. You woke up today by faith, not knowing what's going to happen. You've made plans by faith, not knowing what's going to happen. You drank your cup of coffee this morning, believing it wasn't poisonous. That's by faith. You are doing things by faith all the time. We are spiritual people. There are things that happen to us that we can't explain that just are much deeper. And what do you go to when your life is in chaos? That would be your God, whether that is God or nature or meditation or some higher power, right? And Marie Claire, again, talks about the power of that. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rank that, right? So now you got four numbers like the airs in the tire of your car, right? Because if the air is too low, what happens? The car veers, or it doesn't run efficiently. It doesn't run effectively. It doesn't run smoothly. It doesn't run the way it should run. Right? So we want to have all our tires inflated correctly to the right height and to the right area so that we can be as productive and efficient as people as we possibly can. And speaking of someone who's got her tires all inflated to the right level, her name is Marie Claire Ross. And she is the founder and CEO of Trustology. And she is also a sought-after speaker, facilitator, and coach. She focuses on building workplace trust in order to improve decision-making speed, accountability, teamwork, productivity. And you know what that all leads to? Profitability. Marie Claire's company is Trustology, and they work with leaders and teams all over the world. So I know that we're in 100 countries around the world. So listen, reach out to Marie Claire and Trustology. And by the way, that's TrustOlogie. That's TrustOlogie. She's also the author of Transform Your Safety, Communication, and Trusted to Thrive, right here. How leaders create connected and accountable teams. If you want to learn more, just visit Marie-ClaireRoss.com. That's Marie, M-A-R-I-E, hyphen, Claire, C-L-A-I-R-E, Ross, R-O-S-S.com. I'm telling you, she's got a lot for you. So ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show and welcome for the first time ever, Marie Claire Ross. Welcome to A New Direction.
Hey, Jay. Thanks for the welcome. That was an amazing welcome. I feel so supported and looking forward to our chat today.
Yeah, I am too. This book is so, I told you, it was so comprehensive. So let's dig in right away. You start out right away and you just say in your introduction, as humans, we want to be with other humans, be part of something bigger and better than we can create on our own. And I believe this to be true. But I wonder sometimes, because of the pandemic and everything, if people still believe that. What are your thoughts? Because we've been so isolated that are we still looking at this the same way?
Yeah, very much. It's actually in some ways part of the human condition. And we could go down all sorts of paths on this. But as human beings, we do tend to think that we're separate, and when we feel connected and with other people, it's when we're in flow. You know, if you look at your life and the happiest memories, it's when you're with other people. It's never when you're alone.
Right.
And it's actually fundamental to how we feel, but there's always a part of us that we're in some ways fighting to actually feel that we're connected and that we belong. Mm. Leaders who are skilled at actually reducing that fear, which I call, the term is interpersonal risk, actually are more likely to create those beautiful trusted teams where really people feel that connection and know that everything's going to be okay because they've got the support of one another.
You say in here as well is that trust is the beating heart of your team. When you say that's a pretty bold statement. So when you say that, what do you really mean when you say trust is the beating heart of your team?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Even Adam Grant, who's a Wharton professor, actually says that trust is at the heart of successful teams. And I actually read that after I'd already written that statement. But there's even research that even backs it up. There's an institute called the HeartMath Institute, and they actually measure the variability of people's hearts. And they actually find that when the people's hearts in a team are in a coherent state, they're more harmonious and in flow. And it really is about leading with compassion. It's about understanding other people. And, you know, I know as human beings, and I know I'm guilty of this, is sometimes when someone in your team, you know, does some work that's not right or not the way you want, you kind of default to, oh, they're an idiot, or, you know, some sort of negative. But the more we can actually, you know, forgive people and just come from that part of us that actually just knows they're trying to do the right thing, but maybe we gave them the wrong instructions. Coming from that perspective is so much beneficial to everyone, because as human beings, when we feel that someone doesn't like us or doesn't trust us, we actually pull back. And, you know, for some people, we behave, you know, really badly. So, you know, a leader that can get that right, you know, is a leader that's always going to have loyal followers that will, you know, do anything for them.
That's interesting, because the next highlight I have that you point out is trust is all about the leader. That's a big statement, because it kind of almost takes the direct report or the employee off the hook. Because
no, I don't know if I made that clear enough, but I do believe trust is two way. So everyone has a responsibility, and, you know, any relationship is a social contract. So both parties have obligations. So the leader needs to model the right behaviors, pull people up when they're doing the wrong thing, and be really clear on that. And employees need to be also accountable for building trust. They can't just expect their leader to do everything for them and do all the work. So there is a two-way nature to it, very much so.
Yeah, I think you said this, or maybe I thought you said this. I don't know if you did or not. But I was thinking in terms of, you know, when you're, and I don't want people to take this the wrong way that I'm calling them dogs. I don't want to, but, you know, I think of my dog, right, that I love dearly, right? And the truth of the matter is that dog trusts me, right? Has put their trust in me that I'm not going to put it in a bad position, right? And, you know, I've trained with it. I've done all sorts of things with it. And I think all the time, you know, that it's my responsibility to take care of him, right? It's really not his responsibility to take care of me. Right, I have to take care of my puppy, right, my baby, right. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's a fair comparison or not, but that's kind of how I saw it. Maybe I pulled that out of there somehow. Is that a fair comparison?
No. I like the story, but I would be a bit concerned if we treated our employees like helpless puppies, because.
Ah, okay.
You know, then you get more entitled behaviors. And I often get people complaining about employees that want more pay, but for not doing any more work. And, you know, they expect, you know, more. And so there is, you know, we really do have to balance that. And I think also we're adults, and we want to have the emotional maturity in the workplace where everyone is actually doing the right thing. Because, you know, what I define trust is that it's when you can confidently rely on and predict that others will do the right thing and make good on their promises. Well, everyone has a responsibility in that. So, you know, we've got to make sure that we're holding our people to a higher standard.
Right.
And a good leader does that in a really fair way that makes it great for everyone. Because you don't want, like, you know, one of the issues I find, because in the research I do in organizations, is that if you have a team and you have a low performer and the leader does nothing about that low performer because he doesn't want to make it awkward, it then gives license to everyone else in that team to underperform. Mm-hmm. And then the other people in that team think, well, we can't trust our leader to do the right thing. He's allowing this toxic poor performer to stay here. So there really is that need to really, you know, through behaviors and actions and communication, bring people up. And this is what I actually think is the gift of leadership, that leaders have this really powerful ability that can actually bring people to a higher standard in their behaviors, you know, which has an amazing flow-on effect on society.
You know what? I love the fact that you called me out and said that my analogy and metaphor was bad. It's a lovely story, but no, it's wrong. I love that. That's so good. I can hear my wife going, yes, thank you. Thank you, Marie Claire, for doing that to him. I appreciate it. No, that's beautiful. You know, it's interesting.
It's an interesting one because I have cats. I love all animals.
Right,
but
right.
I have cats. And one cat that I had, and he died a few years ago, but he used to be my neighbor's cat, but they weren't looking after him. So he came over to my place and refused to go back. So, it's interesting, you know, because dogs do that thing where they will just be loyal, but they do put themselves in circumstances where they have terrible owners that mistreat them.
Yes, they do.
I'm not saying that you do that.
No, I wasn't one of them. No, I know that. No, that was just that my yeah. analogy or metaphor was poor. That was the problem with it. That was okay. But you know, something that.
But I like the effort.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I did give it a try. So the one of the things that is happening right now is this issue called quiet quitting, and I thought about it because as I was reading your book, this came up on LinkedIn. About how people are doing just enough, right, to keep from getting fired. They don't want to do any more than they have to. How I thought about you and your book as I was thinking about this concept. Does this help this integrated trust building system that you propose that you have developed over the past 8 to 10 years? Does this kind of help us get past quiet quitting or help us maybe move past quiet quitting?
Yeah, so if anything, it's more in the team zones, the achievement zone model that it really refers to. So,
well, let's do that. Let's do that. Let's do the achievement.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do the, okay, it's the basics. We're still in the introduction. That's cool. But okay, so from apathy to achievement, right? Let's just go there. One of the things that you say is the most successful leaders possess a powerful combination of competencies, right? And you talk about that they possess both a results focus and an interpersonal skill focus, right? And those are the top. And you've given all sorts of statistics by Zinger and Folkman in their study. But the model is that we have these four quadrants. In the lower left-hand quadrant, we have the apathy zone. And then in the top right-hand quadrant, we have the achievement zone, and then we have anxiety and abatement zone. So let's talk about what is the apathy zone?
Yeah, so the apathy zone is when you have a team that has low psychological safety and low accountability. And they're typically led by, you know, leaders that really don't like to lead people. It might be because they've got other projects that they're working on, so they're under-managing their team. Or it might be they're just, you know, emotionally volatile. So when they are with their team, they're, you know, they explode, they tell them off, nothing's ever good enough. And so the team, you know, defaults into, you know, being on completely focused on self-preservation. And they don't have the support of each other. They probably do get into more of a blame gossip type cycle, but it's a really terrible zone to be in. It's the zone that we drop into when we're also looking for another job. And it's, you know, it's not a nice place. And then to the right of that, we have the abatement zone. And for all of you who don't know abatement, and I was one of those, it means declining in performance. I had to find an A word, but it's actually really apt because it could be called comfort zone or, you know, status quo. But what's really interesting in this zone where you have actually high psychological safety but low accountability. And in this zone, you have a leader that, you know, is probably coasting on past success. So it's like, oh, well, we've already done really well, you know, in the past. We don't have to do any more. We're already really good. It's that hubris type zone. And in this zone, you'll have a leader that might actually be having personal issues or there's too much going on. So they're too exhausted to be accountable themselves or even bring their people up to be more accountable. So this is where innovation goes to die. It's where no one, you know, fixes anything. And people work 9 to 5, they escalate issues to their boss, and their boss gets more and more busy as their people do less and less work. But the interesting thing here is that because you've got this psychological safety that's high, it's actually high in terms of it enables people to not have to work so hard. So in some ways, it's a pseudo safety. You can hide in here and not work. And that's where I believe the quiet quitters are going. And I have a big issue with it because, you know, we're all here to work together and, you know, create something bigger and better than what we could on our own. So to go off and just get a paycheck, like, that is not a life.
Right.
That is not a life.
Right. So, okay, all right. I want you to hold that thought because we're gonna go into a commercial break here real quick. But I want you to hold that thought because you've just opened up a Pandora's box for me here. All right, her name is Marie Claire Ross, right? The book is entitled Trusted to Thrive, How Leaders Create Connected and Accountable Teams. It's brilliant. She's brilliant. And you're listening to her here on A New Direction. Hey, folks, listen, Epic Physical Therapy, my physical therapist, I think they should be your physical therapist too, by the way. Look, you know what? Whether you're recovering from injury, surgery, suffering everyday aches and pains, doesn't matter. Maybe you're a professional athlete or want to be an athlete. Here's the deal. They're going to provide you with a customized treatment plan tailored for you. So look, they work with all of us. So, you know, when you're looking for your epic relief, your epic recovery, your epic results, look no further. Look for Epic Physical Therapy. That's epicpt.com. That's epicpt.com. And Linda Kraft and Linda Kraft Team Realtors, right? For more than 35 years, helping people all over the world sell and buy homes. But that's not what they do. They don't really help people sell and buy homes. What they help you do is make your life transition. That's what they help you do. Because let's face it, every time you buy or sell a home, it is a new life transition. And they want to be part of that with you. So listen, when you're making a life transition that includes a home, go to Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. That's lindacraft.com. LindaCraft.com. And shout out to Hint, right? Because we're on TV, right? We're DBTV, right? On Apple TV, Samsung TVs, all over. And we're even all over the world on certain cable companies. So listen, Hint is the official beverage of DBTV. I like it. David Bruner, whose station it is, he loves it. You know what? Get yourself some Hint. It's delicious. And we're back here on A New Direction with Marie Claire Ross in her book, Trusted to Thrive. All right, I wanted to stop you there because I to go into commercial break because there was a couple things that you said. And I wanna go back real quick to the apathy zone because you said in the apathy zone, you have leaders who don't want to lead. And I'm like going, then why are you a leader? That was the first thing that popped into my head. And then we got into the abatement zone, and I'm like going, again, you got a leader who's overwhelmed and just kind of letting things go. And I thought that you were going to tell me the quiet quitters were in the apathy zone, but you just told me they're in the abatement zone. That's cool.
Yeah, well, they're actually in both.
Okay.
But they potentially are in both, but either way, they're just not being held accountable for results.
I love that. And, I love that because it gives me a picture. Go ahead.
Yeah, and you were right before when you said that, well, the integrated trust building system can help pull them out of that. And you're right. So it really does involve a leader who has the ability to really help them envision the future, to really pull them up to that higher standard, to give them more autonomy, more responsibility, which probably sounds a little bit overwhelming, but, you know, we all grow when we're stretched.
Right.
We do so much better in life when we have someone that believes in us and actually goes, well, this is what I think you can achieve. I'm going to help you get there. And, you know, that is incredibly powerful. And that's what these quiet quitters need.
God, you're good. You are so good. All right. All right. So above the apathy zone on the top left is this anxiety zone. Walk us through what the anxiety zone is.
Yeah, so the anxiety zone is where you have low psychological safety but high accountability. And what's really interesting with these teams is that they work so hard. They're, you know, getting things out, delivering. It's all about delivering and getting things done. And these teams, you know, are really good at getting stuff done, but it's at the cost of people. So again, you have leaders that all they care about are tasks to be done, but they don't care about their people and how they're feeling and that they might be stressed and overworked. And so in this zone, you'll often find that you get a lot of stress and burnout. It can often hide toxic behaviors. You know, there was an organization that I was talking to, and they actually were so good at delivering and making lots of money, and it was all, you know, all aligned with their purpose. But unfortunately, in the background, you know, some of the leaders, there was sexual misconduct. It ended up blowing up as a huge PR disaster. Their reputation was ruined because of how some of the staff were treated in this environment. So that's one of the issues in the anxiety zone, is that, you know, you can get lots of, you know, workplace health injuries and really toxic behaviors that, you know, are allowed to happen because, you know, they're making money for the company.
So the anxiety zone, I think, is so typical of what we see. I would say is kind of a U.S. typical thing that we see here, where they just drive, produce. I think that's pretty typical of a lot of companies here. But there's, again, we see high burnout rates and those type of things because of the anxiety. And I want people to keep in mind, we're talking about these are companies that have high accountability, the anxiety zone, but they have low psychological safety. All right. So now we got high accountability and now we have high psychological safety, and this is the achievement zone. So this is the heavenly area of where we want to be as a team and a business. Help us understand what that looks like.
Yeah, so the achievement zone is really where you have that leader that challenges people to be their best and creates a supportive environment where everyone's supporting one another. And it's that environment that we all crave. If you look back at your career and the best times, it's when you've been in a team, you've all been really connected, you've all been working on something challenging, and you've come through the other side. Mm. And this is really what drives us as human beings. So it's one of the best feelings that we can have.
So you say in this zone, okay, and I'm asking listeners and viewers this. You say, you know, when you're in this zone, when you feel excited about going to work in the morning, you look forward to solving problems with others and making progress. You love to learn, share new insights, and envision and engage in the future. That's utopic. I mean, but you're saying that this is achievable.
Yeah. And in my book, I researched, because I do a lot of research. So I've met lots of people that have been in this zone. Sometimes they haven't been able to get back in there. They've worked on a team, been in a team. I talked about Damien at the start of the book, that, you know, was in this team that, you know, he, 10 years, 15 years later, he was still just reminiscing about the feeling of this team. Mm. You know, for some people, you have these teams, you get to spend time in them, but it's not long term. And this is one of the mistakes, and I find this one fascinating, is that sometimes I'll talk about this team zone and people will say to me, oh, yeah, I've been in that zone with my team for 6 years now. It's not possible. You know, it's hard to sustain because you've got to have that curiosity, that drive, you know, be able to be, you know, resilient when times are tough and still know that you're going to pull through together. And so it's one of those things that, you know, it is true, but we're not there for long. It's, you know, we're in and out because, you know, there's always personal stuff and challenges and, you know, COVID came along and all those sorts of things that can, you know, knock us out of there.
So yeah, you do talk about that it's not stable, that we can't just stay in this achievement zone. And so, but a part of it is not because we don't have high accountability or we don't have high psychological safety, right? I mean, part of it is because we've got to change in order to improve, or we've got to make changes because we, again, if we stay the same, we're gonna die. So we can't stay stagnant. So we're gonna get out of that achievement zone when we're in the midst of change. I think that's what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah, well, it's, to be in the achievement zone long term, it's very much like the four questions that you asked at the start of the show. We've constantly got to be curious. We're constantly got to be self-reflecting and analyzing where we are. The best leaders that I find that stay in that achievement zone for longer are doing a weekly self-reflection on their leadership and their teams. So there's this, it's quite a lot of hard work to be there. It also means being really curious as well and continuously improving. And not everyone's able to do that for a long period of time. Interestingly, a few of the leaders that I found that were in this zone said to me that the biggest risk for them when they're in the achievement zone is that they start to get bored, because they're no longer getting that feedback that things are wrong in their team or across their department, so they start to meddle.
Wow.
So it's really interesting when people
That's
have the self-awareness to actually realize, oh, hey,
they're
this is
getting a
getting
bored
boring.
they're
I'm
getting a
achieving all the time.
right, I've got bored achieving. Okay, all right. Okay, all right. So it's funny, but I get it because we want to be challenged. Right? We like challenge ultimately. Right?
Yeah. And that's why I get so annoyed at these quiet quitters, because you're quitting life. Like, come on.
Yeah,
What sort of life
right.
is
You're not
that?
challenged. You're not challenging yourself. You're not doing anything challenging. Okay, you have a chapter right after this called Trust. I love this title, this chapter, The Rocket Fuel Up to the Achievement Zone. So let's talk about trust as the rocket fuel and why you use that term in particular.
Yeah, well, the beautiful thing with trust is that when you have it in your team, things work really well. So people are, working together, they're, innovating, all those things that we talked about just before in the achievement zone. But when you don't have it, that's when things get really tough. It's like walking through sludge. Things are really slow. People are blocking each other, they're blaming one another, they're, working around each other. And it's just horrible, to the point where so many people will tell me, I just don't want to get up in the morning and work with my team. I dread work. It's just not fun. So it gives you that speed, which of course was talked about at length in the book by Stephen Covey, The Speed of Trust. But it really does galvanize people. And it stops our brains from freaking out, which is really the important part of it.
You have a quote here. You say the problem isn't knowing that trust is important. It's knowing how to frequently and consistently build trust. And more importantly, it's about making it a daily part of how you interact with others. Here's what I love. Even when you're tired, right? Reeling from a negative event or dealing with people you don't like. Ooh. Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah, it is hard, but it's, I can trust to, it's like a battery. So you can have a full battery, but if you leave that battery for a while, that charge will slowly decrease. And that's what a lot of leaders do. They'll tell me, oh, I've already built trust with blah, blah. And they think they can just, do whatever they want and everything will be okay. But you've got to constantly replenish it. You've got to check in with people, because trust is one of those things that's personal. How people decide whether to trust someone changes for them, and it's really about their life experience and their beliefs. So what's true for us, we need for people to be trusted, is different for others. So, I used to get a lot of leaders come up to me and say, hey, I'm really trusted, which in itself is a bit of a flag. But they'd say, I'm really trusted. All you have to do is tell the truth and be consistent. Well, that's really hard.
Right, right.
Because there are times when you can't tell the truth. And I know that sounds terrible, but if
Right.
you're going through a merger or, you know, there are legal reasons or there's
Right.
personal, you know, if someone's got cancer and they're not working very well, but they don't want people to know they're undergoing
Right.
chemotherapy, well, you can't go and tell everyone. So there's all those things. And then in terms of consistent, well, I don't know anyone that's very good at consistency. You know, if what I find with most leaders is that they're inconsistently consistent. But they're not aware, and it's a really hard thing to be able to manage.
And this leads us into the three main misunderstandings with building trust that you have put, which I think are really powerful because I think people don't leaders don't understand this. First one is technical skills are seen as more important than relationship building. Why is that? Why do we misunderstand that when it comes to trust in that particular one?
Oh, sorry, you cut out for me,
oh,
and I didn't hear the
yeah,
question.
Oh, no, sorry, no worries. The three main misunderstandings, the first one you have is technical skills are seen as more important than relationship building.
Yeah, I can't 100% hear you, just the technical skills and relationship skills. So one thing I just did actually want to point out, which kind of relates to something you said before, because you were saying how you don't understand how leaders of teams don't like leading people. But what is very common in Australia and most other countries I work with, and I'm sure it's common where you are as well, and that is that people are promoted because of their technical abilities. And, you know, we go through schooling believing that, you know, to do well in life, we have to get an A. We're really groomed about our individual results. So it's actually hard for us as human beings to actually realize that, you know, once you get into a leadership position, it's about the results of your team. And it's, you know, that's through the interpersonal skills. Leaders that are really good at, you know, influencing others and making them feel good rather than looking good are extremely powerful.
How about one of the three main misunderstandings of building trust is it's one way. Are we losing each other there?
Yeah, it's cutting in and out, but I just did hear you at the end, so that was exciting. there are three kind of areas where I find that people misunderstand trust. So they just assume that people trust the way they do. So that's what I was just talking about before. So we really need to get better at understanding other people and what they need to trust us. And that involves conversations and really taking the time to understand the people around us and, you know, who they really are and what's important to them. Another misunderstanding is that trust is something that we just get because we're a leader, but we do have to work on it, as I said before. And we can't actually assume that we have it. I see so many leaders that just think that they have it, not realizing that sometimes that very belief actually creates distrust because they're not really understanding people at their level.
Assume trust, and then trust is only one way. That's a misunderstanding, right? That there's only one way that trust is trust. Well, I guess we kind of talked about that trust only works in one direction, not two. Here. Okay. We're clearly having a little bit of problems because we're in another country, so we're having a little bit of issues, but that's okay. We're going to keep working through it. One of the things that you talk about in your book are the three oppositional supporting trust forces. And you talk about micro trust forces, meso trust forces, and macro trust forces. Can you talk about those?
Yeah, so what's really interesting with trust is that we need to understand that, you know, sometimes there are forces that are within our control and sometimes there are forces that aren't. And so if you imagine down the bottom of almost like an evolving kind of circles coming out, you have the micro trust forces. So the really important thing for us to have more trust around us is that we need to trust ourselves. That's the most important thing. And where we often get stuck as human beings is that, you know, we go into that, you know, whole imposter syndrome. We don't trust our abilities to get things done, or that we're good enough as a leader. And people can feel that and pick up on that, and it actually reduces the impact that we have. So it's really important that we actually trust ourselves. And this means, you know, believing in ourselves, you know, listening to our intuition. It also means believing in a higher power, which sounds a little bit weird, but, you know, sometimes when things get tough, we just have to trust that everything's going to be okay. Mm. So from that, that's central to our leadership. And then we move into what I call the meso-trust forces, and that's the impact of our teams and what's going on there. And so it's really important that in a team that leaders are ensuring that people are working with one another, that they, you know, that we're removing those poor performers, because that can reduce trust as well, as I talked about earlier. And it's about really understanding the team dynamics and, you know, making sure that communication is clear and expectations are clear, so people are working to the right standard. And so we have some control at that level. And then we have the macro trust forces, which we just don't have any control over. So that might be weather events or pandemics or a restructure, a new CEO, all sorts of things that we don't have any control over, even bureaucracy. But we have to manage and really, you know, explain to our team, well, you know, this is what's happening. This, you know, we don't know what's going to happen, but no matter what, I really believe we're going to get through it all.
Her name is Marie Claire Roth. The book is entitled Trusted to Thrive: How Leaders Create Connected and Accountable Teams. You're listening to her here on A New Direction. Hey, folks, listen, epic physical therapy, my physical therapist, and I want them to be yours too, right? But here's the deal. They have the most advanced top-of-the-line equipment, including the Alter G anti-gravity treadmill, the Normatec compression sleeves, my favorite Game Ready. That's just a few. They're trained to certify in the most comprehensive cutting-edge treatments, blood flow restriction therapy, dry needling, cupping, and so much more. Listen, when you're ready for your epic relief, your epic recovery, your epic results, start at Epic Physical Therapy. That's epicpt.com. That's EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. There is a reason why her clients, and matter of fact, her first client from 1985, still comes back and says she's a legend of customer service, right? Because why? Because they don't sell homes. They sell life transition. And actually, they don't sell. They just help you with your life transition. And so, you know what? When you're ready to make a transition in life and it's related to real estate, start with Linda Kraft, Team Realtors. That's LindaCraft. That's LindaCraft.com. LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction, and I'm with my friend Marie Claire Ross, and who is, where are you, by the way, located? Where are you right now?
I'm actually in the Hunter Valley in New South Wales. I'm running a leadership conference today. So I'm normally in Melbourne.
So, okay. So you're in, yeah, you're in, so New, you're
this, in, I'm in a hotel room.
Yeah. Right. So you're in New South Wales. Okay. Because folks may not know this, but sometimes, you know, when we do these overseas talks, you know, there's a delay, and then sometimes, you know, we can't hear each other very well. So what I'm doing is, for what you don't know behind the scenes, is I am sending Marie Claire a private chat saying, oh, here's what I'm going to try to cover in case she can't hear me. So we're going to talk about your system called the Integrated Trust System, because I found it very, very powerful. So help people understand how what you do can help build trust in teams.
Yeah, so the Integrated Trust Building System is really based on, it's actually, I designed it based on a couple of other theories. So in the book by Christine Comerford and Smart Tribes, she talks about these three neuroscience factors and safety, impact, and connection or belonging. But then I read the culture code, and then that talked about safety, connection, and future. And I do a lot of research in companies, as I mentioned before, and what I found that, you know, there were intersections with that, and what they really do is when we get these right, they create trust. So what I mean by that is what actually happens is that as human beings, we're so fearful of being with other people. This drives us all the time. And it's really important for a leader to understand that and do things to mitigate that natural fear that we have with being with other people, because we are so frightened that we're going to make a mistake and, you know, people will, you know, tell us off or kick us out of that of our team. And our brains are actually subconsciously asking questions all the time, such as, am I safe to be here? If I make a mistake, will these people still like me? Am I connected? Is the work that I'm doing meaningful? And what's my future with these people? You know, do I have a future? Is there a future career plan, career path for me? And a leader who actually gets this right builds trust. And so there are three pillars that I unpack in the book. So the first one is safety. So it's part psychological safety and part physical safety. And then the next one is connection. And connection is more than just connecting people together. It's also about leaders connecting how the different pieces and parts of a business work together. So it's a bit like putting together the jigsaw for people. Because what I found in my research and the work that I do with organizations is employees actually want to know what's going on everywhere else and understand, you know, if they're working on a project, if they don't want to work on just one little bit and know that little bit, they want to know the broader picture. So leaders who can help them understand the meaning of their work and how important and valued they are to the rest of the organization play a really critical role. And I believe that's where leaders can really help in terms of reducing that quiet quitting as well. And then we have underneath all that, the stepping into a meaningful future, which is, you know, really helping people see the exciting future that they've got ahead, so, you know, they can actually see that the hard work will be worth it.
You talk about the importance of one-on-ones, and that one-on-ones are critical. How do we do them wrong often, you know, the annual review, but it's critical to the integrated trust system. How do we get them right?
Yeah, so annual reviews should be going in the way of the dinosaur by now, because they're pretty terrible. When I started my career, which is a long time ago, the annual review was something to be feared, and you learn stuff about yourself that you wish someone had told you when it was an issue, but you find out about it 6 months later. It's not helpful. So one-on-ones are brilliant because why I love them so much, and this is, I actually find high-performing leaders do them on a regular basis. So they really do build that connection between an employee and their boss, but it actually gives employees the opportunities to ask questions, and they should actually be encouraged to ask their boss questions. And the leader should also be asking questions to build that trust and connection. And, you know, I actually believe that leaders should be helping to build safety, connection, and future in those one-on-ones by asking questions that help people to really feel that. Because this integrated trust building system, it's really about the emotional communication. Because, you know, as human beings, we're always, you know, picking up on the signals around us. So leaders need to be really good at not only verbal communication and what they say, but also the little signs that they're sending out, you know, through their, you know, facial expressions and interactions and other things, and even what they're not saying as well.
You talk about accountability, and we all know accountability is powerful, but we do that wrong too. So what is accountability really, and how do we get that right with our employees or direct reports?
Yeah, well, accountability, and it goes back to the two-way thing that I was talking about before. And this is the interesting thing about trust. Everything to do with trust is two-way. It's not about one person doing something. It's always the other person doing it back. So a really good leader actually models accountability as well. So they've got to be meeting their KPIs. They've got to be getting things done when they say they're going to get it done, because people are judging them on that. You know, employees won't be accountable if they see that their boss isn't. And so you need the leader to be doing that and then calling people up on their behaviors when they're not accountable. And that can be really hard. You know, there are times we don't want to whinge. We don't want to nag people to do stuff. We don't want to get caught into micromanagement. But setting really clear expectations and parameters about the work to be done, what you expect, and having a two-way conversation about that, you know, that can be done in a one-on-one, is extremely powerful and helpful.
One of the things you talk about, too, as a key interaction is meetings. And we talked about the one-on-one meeting. But I think you also talked about regular meetings, and most people don't like meetings, but that's probably because we don't do them well. How, what do you recommend?
Yeah, well, a really good meeting, it's, you know, meetings are absolutely fabulous because they actually get people clear on the work to be done and what needs to be done going forward, but you need to plan them out. So I love meetings that a leader does where they have almost like a routine. So it might be the first 5 minutes is spent checking in with people's emotions, and then the next bit might be going into, well, what work are you doing? Where are you stuck? And really, you know, it's, they're not about information sharing. This is where work meetings get boring, is where people just go in and report on what they're doing. But, you know, let's get a bit more interesting and helpful. Let's find out, you know, where are you stuck? What are the issues? What resources do you need? How can we help you? You know, getting people to really work together in a meeting like that can be far more beneficial. But we often don't do that. And that's why they're boring.
They are. Okay. Next, one of the things you talk about when making connection with others is connecting our purpose, getting our direct reports and people to understand purpose, but also connecting it to the company purpose. How do we go about doing that?
Yeah, so this is one of the things, you know, in my research, I found that really amazing leaders would spend the time getting to know their people and their career aspirations, what they were hoping to achieve, you know, either even outside of work, not delineating work and personal lives. And, you know, through that, those conversations, they would then find out what the person wanted, that what's in it for them piece. And then they would connect that to the broader business purpose. So to give you just a really quick example, my teenager had a camp that they had to go to Central Australia, you know, Uluru, that beautiful part of the world, and they didn't want to go. And I took them for a walk and I said, well, tell me, what is it that you're hoping to achieve in your life? You know, what's, what career choice do you think you want to do? And they're 15. And they said, I want to be a film producer. I love films that are to do with stories about culture. And so it was perfect. So then I was able to tie that into the camp they're going on, was actually learning about the Indigenous culture and how they could actually learn some amazing things through that that would help them be a better film producer. And that actually got them interested. So it's those sorts of things right. that just take a little bit of time to unpack, but are just so powerful.
Let's talk about how we get into that future state, but we have to be aware of the present. How does that all work together, being in the present and yet getting to the future state?
So one of the things with change is that when we tell people, hey, we're going over here, people are like, well, I'm actually quite happy here where I am. And so what we have to do is actually explain what it looks like where we are now, but what are the issues with it? Because that's, you know, and people will, go, oh, yeah, that's true. Well, we do have an issue with that system. It's not working. So we can't just drag people into the future without explaining what's wrong with where we are now. And a lot of leaders don't take the time to do that. But it's one of the critical paths to actually helping people, you know, embrace change and trusting that where they're going is going to be okay.
Okay, so this next question is kind of a fun one, that's a psychological one, but you talked about how confirmation bias can be both a bad thing. Of course, I think we know that piece, but also because you want us to have positive intent when we are making connection about that confirmation bias can be a good thing. We can develop that.
I'm just trying to work out why I said that. It's one of those things that, you know, it can either help us or not help us. And it's just important for us as human beings to, you know, this is where we need to really, you know, have that time for self-reflection and review what we're able to achieve. So when we, and it's really sort of being aware that sometimes we think that, you know, we're going somewhere or we're doing something, but we've just kind of just got confused with our intentions. So we just need to be kind of very clear on what it is that we're intending to achieve.
Awesome. You know what? We've done an hour. We've had to work through this. We've been stretched in an hour and we've been challenged, but you and I have done it. I have thoroughly enjoyed you on the show. We'll have to do this again and do it under different circumstances, but tell people how they can get a hold of you.
Well, you can just go to my website, marieclaireross.com, or find me on LinkedIn as well.
Awesome. Folks, that's the show. You know what I say to you every week, and that is this, right? You know what? You're in control of three things in your life: your attitude, your effort, and your resilience. Only you could control those. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are. You're still in control of those things. Take control of those immediately. I'm going to be back next week with another great guest. It's going to be another great book. It's going to be another great show. And as I say to you all over the world, thank you so much. And ciao, everybody.
Things are going to change. You can find the strength to go a different way. Your dreams will take you places you have never been before. Find your passion, find your strength. Don't worry anymore. A new direction.